And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Elijah Campbell behind the glass, spinning the tunes, bringing the hits, taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. It's good to be back. Joe, we spent all last hour talking about the Preds. We're going to switch gears right now, talk a little college hoops. Some big news over the course of the past week in the world of college hoops, especially here locally in Nashville, Tennessee. Adam Kunkel goes into the transfer portal, if I could spit that out. It's been a long time since I talked on the radio, Joe.
I understand.
It's okay.
It's the non-caffeinated soda you have over there.
Wow, are you blasting my non-caffeinated drink?
I mean, it's funny to see someone do a 6 a.m. show with a caffeine-free Diet Coke, man.
Shouldn't that be kind of impressive of how tough I am?
Yeah,
I don't
actually
need the caffeine.
Yeah, it is kind of making a statement.
Yeah. Caffeine is not needed for this this beauty to come on the radio and start talking at 6 o'clock in the morning. Isn't that right, Elijah?
Well, that makes one of us.
Well, see, there we go.
I'm about 33 ounces in on some caffeine with more to come.
Have to. Within an hour at least.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's acceptable.
But, yeah. Adam Kunkel.
Adam Kunkel.
Transfer portal. Yeah. I was surprised, really surprised to see Adam Kunkel, and he's going to Xavier. So he was in the portal and quickly out of the portal.
Yes, did not spend much time in the portal. You can get caught in that portal sometimes. You got
to
get out.
I mean, the reality of college basketball is it's almost like you have to scout players like mid. If you're a high major and we're counting Xavier as a high major, you're scouting mid-major players. I'm not going to say as much as you're scouting prep players, but, man, there's a lot of that. And so no idea if, you know, this was an active recruitment situation or what, but Kunkel to Xavier, it's tough for Belmont. That I think Belmont and Elijah, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I think with what they had coming back, probably the OVC favorite and a team with a really good chance. I mean, Murray State was going to be good,
yeah.
And Austin Peay is going to be really good with Terry Taylor coming back. Jordan Adams is coming back.
Yeah, that's Jordan Adams and Terry Taylor. So you probably have the best duo in the OVC.
That might
1-2
be,
punch right there.
Might be your favorite. And, you know, so those teams are good. And Belmont will still be good, but Adam Kunkel's a really special player. And I just don't think, and I have no idea everything behind the scenes on this, but if the idea at all is I'm going to this place to, you know, be better exposed or whatever. I don't think that's necessary if you're playing at Belmont, but that's just me. Maybe I'm a bit of a homer on that.
And Belmont really hasn't had to deal with this. Like, you haven't had
no
players leaving Belmont, entering the transfer portal, then going on elsewhere and having some success. I would assume that once Kunkel's able to play at Xavier, I think he's got to sit out this next year and then has 2 years left of eligibility after that. He's going to be a good player for them because Xavier's a team, by their coach's own admission, struggled last year offensively. And Kunkel is a guy, he can shoot, he's very gifted offensively, I think can play at that level for sure. That's a big loss for Belmont and Casey Alexander, who I thought did outstanding work in his first year coming in, replacing a legend in Rick Byrd. And you thought maybe, you know, Kunkel's going to be a big part of what they're building with for the next couple of years. All of a sudden, he's gone. That's a sucky way to go about it if you're Casey Alexander, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, 16 points a game and, you know, really just emerged. I mean, he didn't play that much as a freshman.
Yeah.
I agree that he will be able to play at Xavier, and I think he'll score for them. This is, in general, this is one of those also, am I better off being, quote-unquote, the guy at one place and maybe – pushing 20 points a game, or I'm a rotational player at a higher level scoring 11 a game. You know, I mean, and I don't know if that's going to be the case. It doesn't mean he can't go to Xavier and be a primary scorer, but, you know, it's too bad for Belmont and for the league. I mean, the league's been on such a great run when you're talking about multiple bids, you're talking about multiple first round picks. You know, that's where it's like, hey, Belmont just sent a guy the first round.
Yeah.
I don't actually – when's the last time Xavier did? I don't know. But, I mean, you know,
it's
make
been
that
while
argument.
Yeah.
Right?
I'd say since maybe David West might have been the last person they put in the first round of the NBA draft.
And they've had a lot of good players and good teams.
But NBA exposure, it's really not much different because TV-wise, too, Belmont's got that, or the OVC's got the contract with ESPN Plus. Like, you can watch every single OVC game on television now. And I know Xavier in the Big East has Fox Sports, so they're nationally televised as well. So like, there is an exposure, from the exposure standpoint, there's a little bit of an advantage for playing at Xavier, too. But, I mean, Belmont the last couple of years has made trips to Boston College, has played against some of the big boys as well. It's a little bit of an advantage, but I think Belmont will honestly be all right. And then Kunkel's a huge loss, but the thing that helped them last year was depth. They're really good when it comes to depth, and Casey Alexander's a really, really good recruiter because they recruit towards a certain style of player. I mean, you don't need to get the five stars every year to be able to get the kind of guys that Belmont gets. So it's a big loss for sure, and I honestly think Adam Kunkel will be fine at Xavier. He could be their primary scorer for the next, 2 years? He'll sit out and have about 2 years of eligibility. That's a guy who at the OVC level was scoring 30 points per 100 possessions. That is good.
Yeah.
That is very good. He was scoring those 16 points a game on like 28 minutes per game. He can light it up. So really, it could be a mutually beneficial thing for both teams because it's going to cause guys like Ben Shepherd for Belmont to step in and play a larger role. Ben Shepherd can play. He was overshadowed by Kunkel, and Kunkel took a lot of his minutes, but Shepherd's a young guy who could really play too, and is a Belmont type of player that they really look for when they do hit the recruiting trail.
And I feel like Belmont has gotten to the point where they're established enough, not only locally, but you know, nationally, when you're thinking of mid-majors, I mean, Belmont's one of the first names that comes up in terms of what they've been able to do consistently in the OVC and the damage at times they've been able to do in the tournament. I mean, they almost beat Duke. I mean, that opens people's eyes. I mean, so I think Belmont's going to be fine. I think Casey Alexander, like you said, is a really good coach, a very good recruiter. But it just it does kind of suck that he's gone because you guys mentioned the OVC this year with Belmont, Murray State, Austin Peay. That's going to be fun to watch. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And certainly Belmont just got weaker because of that.
Yeah, Ben Shepherd, that's the name, Elijah, no doubt. 6'6", and you could see it last year. I mean, he absolutely could be a dynamite player. Rick Byrd said, I think at some point last year, Rick Byrd's like, you know, this, he has all OVC potential. You don't want to put too much on someone, but you know, Grayson Murphy, terrific all around point guard. Nick Mazinski is, I just hit my microphone. Sorry.
First time I knew it would happen. Woo. I had it at 6:30. I knew 6:30 is the first time I thought Joe would punch the mic.
Usually it's more that I forget to turn on the mic, but you got a variety of issues with me and microphones. but Nick Mazinski is, I mean, he's a high major big man. So they still have a really good team, and there's some other guys, Tate Pierce. I mean, they've got some people coming in. They're going to be a really good team. But with Kunkel and all that, it's you think about, wow, what could they do as a 13 seed, maybe even a 12 seed against somebody in an NCAA tournament we hope happens in 2021, you know? I mean, that's the thing. And that's another thing with all this is, when are we going to see these teams play for the first time?
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Joe,
name the artist.
You're loving the. I can't name this artist.
Tribe Called Quest, baby. Good job, Elijah.
I was born in 1992. Ding, ding,
ding, ding. Yeah, this was only like a year before you were born that song came out. Something like that. 91.
So while I was not alive, this song came out.
I love the Beatles. That was all before I was alive.
Hey, this is before I was alive.
That's true. I think Elijah's younger than me.
I got you beat by about 3 years.
We'll get you going. I wore a T-shirt with country music artists on it, so this is for you, Robbie.
Are you starting to like country music?
No.
Is this a thing?
No, this was like a benefit. My wife worked it a few years ago, but it was a country concert.
And you wore it for me. Well, that makes me feel very nice.
So, you know that, yeah. So Chris Jansen, you know Chris Jansen?
I know
Jansen.
Who Chris Jansen is.
See?
Yeah. Right. I don't know who the other guy is, but that's fine. Chris Jansen, one out of two ain't
Jeffrey
bad.
Jeffrey Seal?
Yeah, I don't know who
that is. He is the bigger name on the shirt.
Well, let me just tell you. I know who Chris Jansen is. I have no clue who Jeffrey Steele is.
All right. And now
No disrespect to Jeffrey Steele. I'm sure he's great. but I don't know who he is.
And now you know A Tribe Called Quest scenario, one of the all-time great songs in hip-hop history.
Well, there you go.
All right. Fife Dog, rest in peace.
You know it's good. You know you're doing a good job bringing the tunes back in when Joe's just got the head bobbing a little bit. Kind of looks like a bobblehead just going back and forth.
It's like natural caffeine.
Hey, that's the goal back here. If I see heads bobbing, then I'm doing my job. I should keep stats on how often I do that.
You really should.
Impressive.
Head bobs per 60. There you go. I just made it up.
That's right. Elijah's a big advanced stats guy.
He is.
So.
Oh, yeah. It's right down my alley.
Well, Joe, some big news last week. Mikey Williams, who, for those who don't know, the number one basketball player in the class of 2023 in high school right now, came out with his top 10 list in terms of colleges that he's looking at. And an interesting name, actually a lot of interesting names on that list, but one locally that has local ties, TSU, Tennessee State University, on the list of 10 that Mikey Williams came out with. And of course, Mikey Williams is a guy, he's going to be recruited by everyone. I mean, North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, all your big names, Kansas you want to throw out there, he's going to be recruited by everyone. But he came out with his list, and TSU is on that list, and maybe even highlight that even further. Five of the schools that he came out with on that list are historically black colleges and universities, which, of course, that gets you thinking, like, how big would it be for one of those schools, let's use TSU as an example, to land the number one recruit in the country? A lot of people, you know, you've heard him talk about it a little bit, but nobody really thought it was legitimately a possibility. Now I think people are starting to kind of turn their attention to the fact that he could be very serious about going to a place like TSU, which would just be huge here locally. I mean, you talk about a media circus at TSU basketball games. If Mikey Williams ends up there, that would be gigantic news for that program.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it is a huge deal just for TSU to be mentioned here. You know, really. This is where we get into some self-promotion, which, as you know, I shamelessly, but I wrote about TSU and this idea last week. I'm talking to Brian Penny Collins and their new AD, Mickey Allen, who came from UT, of course, was on UT's national championship football team. But there is a movement, and it goes with a lot of things that have been going on in the country, I think. I think it's certainly tied to that. To the Black Lives Matter movement, to, you know, what has been happening in this country for the last few months. I think more, you know, prospects are thinking in these terms. And McCourt Maker, who is Thon Maker's cousin, I think, picked Howard. So
right.
Howard now, an HBCU, has a top, you know, five-star center committed for 2022, is that right?
Yes, I believe so. He's a year older.
2022 kid. Now, Mikey Williams is 2023, out of San Diego. Now,
just tearing it up out there, by the way. Breaking all kinds of records, California records. I think he scored like 77 in a game out there. He's just lighting it up.
Yeah.
Really good player.
And so you've got, like, Memphis is also, by the way, so both Pennies in this state have Mikey Williams, you know, in top 10. But Kansas, you know, USC, Arizona State. But, yeah, Alabama State, North Carolina Central, Hampton, Texas Southern, which is Mike Davis, and then TSU. It's huge to be mentioned. Will there actually be a big movement of players, you know, top players picking HBCUs? I don't know. I still think you're talking about a big difference in resources. You're talking about a big difference in exposure. I will say that one huge selling point, let's just take John Calipari in Kentucky, is come here, I'll develop you, you'll be an NBA player.
Yeah.
I think John Calipari is a very good coach, okay? He is. He's an underrated coach, but he recruits NBA players.
Right.
Like Brian Penny Collins over here, he can coach Mikey Williams up, and he can have a great year in college, and he can be an NBA player if he's that kind of player. Also, by then, the NBA rule may be changed too. So some of these guys may be going more often to the NBA. We've seen the G League thing with guys going and getting paid. There's a lot going on. There's name, image, likeness. That's a huge part of this. And in the piece I wrote, Coach Collins mentioned, yeah, and talking to Teresa Phillips, their former AD, you know, name, image, likeness. Now you're in Nashville, Tennessee. And like you said, Robbie, would it be a circus here? It would be absolutely a circus. It would be so fun. There'd be a lot of attention on a player who chose a place like this. And a player like that could stand out, kind of like John Morant did at Murray State. That's
exactly who I was going to bring up.
More than, say, if the player was one of 7-8 great players at a Kentucky or North Carolina. So that is a part of this. I think the big fish, little pond thing with name, image, likeness could really – I've always thought could more even things out than the other way around. Some people are like, oh, like in football, everybody's going to – go to, I'm like, well, okay, everybody goes to Alabama and Clemson already, don't they?
Right.
Like, do we have competitive balance in college football? I think you have more likelihood that you'd have a kid who would be like, I could be the star quarterback at, okay, let's say Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I mean, you're Nashville, you've got, you know, you have some potential to stand out in that way and maybe, and in a, maybe like a bigger market, but not like a powerful school and make money. Name, image, likeness. So there's a lot to this, but it's huge for TSU just to be mentioned here. And I do think the potential there is massive. I really do.
I do too. I'm glad you brought up John Morant because he was a guy I was going to bring up in terms of – I'm not saying this is going to be some big movement in terms of your top recruits going to smaller schools and going to places where they're the big fish in the little pond, like you said. But John Morant proved at Murray State, you don't have to go to Kentucky, you don't have to go to Duke to stand out and be one of the best players in the country. Everybody knew at Murray State how good John Morant was. He went number two overall in the NBA draft. That's not going to become the normal path probably, but I do think guys take a look at that and they say, okay, well, John Morant, he was able to go to a smaller school, Murray State, and do what no one has ever done there before, dominate on a night-in, night-out basis, and it didn't hurt his draft status that he was at Murray State. So if you're a guy like Mikey Williams who's come out and has been very outspoken about maybe attending a historically black college or university because of everything going on in our country right now, I do think that it's not just lip service that he's giving. I think he's legitimately considering all of his options, and that's why TSU's on this list. Five of those schools that he laid out there fit that criteria. I don't think it's crazy that he may end up at one of those schools and kind of take that unconventional route. Look, it doesn't matter if Mikey Williams goes to Kentucky or Duke or TSU or Hampton. It doesn't matter where he goes. He's going to be a top five pick in the NBA. He just is. He's that gifted. He's that talented. So when you're in a situation like that, I'm starting to think, especially after you see guys like John Morant, guys are going to look around and say, hey, it doesn't really matter where I go. I'm going to be there for a year anyway. If the rules stay the same, maybe they'll change. Why not go to a place like that and bring a school a spotlight that they've never had before?
Yeah, and Elijah just mentioned to me, so Maker's actually a 20. He's a 2020, so he's this season that we don't know what it's going to look like. But, yeah, it's, you know, Morant is a guy who, by the way, was not a huge recruit.
No.
It's not like John Morant was like, oh, my gosh, you picked Murray State. And that can happen, too. Sometimes you have guys who – really good players, but then you realize, oh, actually a great player. Like John Morant, would he have been that great at a lot? Probably. But I do think in that, on that team, he was able to – you can make the case that he was able to grow in this role where he dominated a team and then lifted a team that people didn't expect to be at that level. And then what they did, especially in that first game of the NCAA tournament, was so much on him. You know, there's value in that. Like you said, Robbie, you're totally right. If you are a player, you will be found. I mean, Anthony Davis, Calipari can get credit for Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis could have come out here to Brentwood River Park for a year, and he would have been, you know, he'd be what he is now. I mean, he's a great player. So you still want to go to a place where you're going to get good coaching and you're going to be, you know, getting prepared for the NBA. But like you said, if these guys go to these HBCUs, think of the exposure they bring. I think you're bringing more TV. You're bringing more resources. You're bringing more fans, and you're helping lift them. And I have my doubts that there's going to be this wave of five stars who are doing
right.
this. But maybe you have more top 150 type kids who still can make you – I mean, TSU's in a really tough league, and that's another attraction too. TSU plays in a league that we just said, just put two guys in the first round. So it's a really good league that already has a level of prominence. And then if you can take advantage of that league, this city, and what is happening potentially with HBCUs, man, it could be special.
I think it's another thing too. Like, these kids now realize that they don't necessarily need the big brand of the school. When you talk about, I guess, with a lot of national talking heads about the brand, like the brand of Duke giving Zion Williamson the exposure. Zion Williamson would have gotten exposure at Belmont, you know, because when you're jumping over people and dunking and doing the things he did, you're going to be put on TV. John Morant was put on, had games flexed to national TV, because if you are that good, you're going to be seen. And Mikey Williams is an example of that. It's almost like the reverse side of what we would assume the Adam Kunkel coin is going somewhere that has maybe a larger TV deal or a program that might be more historically, greater or with a richer history. For this, Mikey Williams doesn't need like Kentucky or Duke. He's already a celebrity at the age of 16, 17 years old. This kid already has a brand for himself, and he's going to bring that wherever he goes. And it's only going to make those brands that he goes to, like a Tennessee State, or if he goes to like Howard or Texas Southern, those places are going to benefit much more from him. They need him more than he really needs them. And that's one thing that we haven't seen with college athletes in a long, long time. A lot of the times it's Alabama football, boost your brand. Not like nowadays, it's almost you can, as a player, make another school your brand, and really you just don't need them for the exposure like you might have used to.
Yeah, another thing with this is whether, look, you go to Kentucky, you got chartered flights, you got these dorms with, like, I don't know, do they have like hot tubs in them and like your own personal chef? I mean, there's stuff like that too, just the resources that they put into recruiting players. Okay, you go to some other places, you're taking more buses, and you've got to also be willing to sacrifice on some of these things if you're going to do this.
No question about it. Certainly going to be interesting to see. Look, there's a long time. It's class of 2023. He's got a long time to figure out where he's going to go. But for TSU to be on that list is huge. That's a big game changer for them. Even to be mentioned on the list, but especially if he ends up going there, it would be great for TSU and our sports climate as a whole, locally. When we come back, Joe Rexroad, you laid out some problems in a piece that dropped late on Friday about the Vanderbilt Athletic Department that I want to get into next. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. A little Naughty by Nature bringing us back in. Robbie Stanley.
I was going to say.
Joe Rexroad.
You know that one.
I know this one. 50% this morning.
I know this one. 50% is a pretty good percentage. You should do that long enough to get you in the Hall of Fame, Elijah.
Sure enough.
I want a classic hip-hop song to every intro. Let's see how Robbie does. Okay, we got to do a show where we see. Yeah, if you can bat to me, you bat 333.
We're in good shape.
You're a Hall of Famer.
You're an MVP season right there.
That's right. There's no question about it. The 7 o'clock hour, also known as the Joe Rexroad self-promotion hour, continues here on Morning Drive. Joe, you came out with a very interesting story on Friday about the Vanderbilt Athletic Department and just the struggles that have gone on there in terms of raising money, all sorts of different things. I want to let you set it up, and then we'll talk about it here. But what is your story about, and what was kind of the premise you were getting at on Friday with your story about Vanderbilt?
Well, the story happened because of a bunch of firings.
Correct.
And that's there is a lot. There is a certain same old story to it, but the Vanderbilt story, there's a little bit of a same old story, different people that has gone on over many years. But this was, to me, an infuriating development. Vanderbilt fired a bunch of really, really good professionals in athletics, communications, also in their video staff. And they're moving the staff under, the university control. Basically, they will be under the university communications umbrella. Now, that part of it, and at first there was some they've eliminated the staff altogether. No, that's not true. But they have fired the people, and then they posted their jobs. In some cases, they posted some of the jobs 9 days before the firings.
Oh, wow.
which didn't actually make the story. There's a lot of stuff that always doesn't make the story. This is like 4,000 words. And basically the idea for me was a lot of people who, to me, have been treated badly, a lot of people who had a lot to say, and I approached a lot of people, and not just the people who got fired, some other people as well, and said, what about, you know, speaking openly, anonymously, which honestly, Robbie, I'm not a huge fan of anonymous sources being quoted. Sometimes you have to use them. This is quotes. But I told everyone, like, I'm not interested in let's smear and smash trash Vandy.
Right.
It's easy to do. But give me your honest thoughts on certain people, on certain things, what you saw, what the future looks like. And so I think it's a fair piece, but there's a lot of frustration. And, yeah, you mentioned fundraising. I think that's the thing that I learned the most on with this is their fundraising situation. Adam Sparks broke the story a couple of years ago about university fundraisers interfering for Adam Sparks with Tennessee and interfering with athletics fundraisers. And I got a little bit more of the details of, like, what that looks like. It's incredible. Anyone who doesn't follow this side of college athletics or whatever, you know, college athletics, everybody can agree, I think, if you can recruit, you can win.
Yeah.
You can be the best coach in history, and if you don't have talent, you're not going to win. I've always wanted to see Roy Williams at Purdue or at Illinois. I don't want to just turn this into a rip Roy Williams fest, but I'm just saying. Roy Williams is an example of someone who he's a fine coach. He's also been at Kansas, North Carolina, and has had his pick of the top players in the country. You have to recruit. If you're going to have a successful college athletics department, you have to raise money. You have to have really good people as fundraisers. You have to give them freedom. You have to work together with the university. In a lot of cases, with some of your top donors, they want to give to both things. At Vanderbilt, it has been, oh, no, this is my donor. Back away. And then you can't approach them unless they say to me, you know, I'd like to donate to athletics. I mean, it's just some of these.
It's just crazy because nobody else insane. In the SEC operates that way.
Oh,
matter of fact,
at all.
A lot of times it's the complete opposite. It's like, yeah, let's get these athletic teams funded and donated to. We'll worry about the schools and the university part of it later. So the fact that nobody at Vanderbilt, if you're trying to raise money for athletics, you can't really interfere with approaching university donors. It's just insane to me. Just absolutely insane.
No, and it's, I mean, they were at a point where, because there weren't any projects to raise money for, I mean, you've got to have projects. You got to say, look, this is our vision. Here, look at these mock-ups. This is what we're going to do for our fill-in-the-blank, our football program, our basketball, whatever it is. There's a lot of stuff that at Vanderbilt you need to do. And so they didn't have anything to show, but even beyond that, they had ticket things taken away from them, which is a lot of fundraising that you can do with basically just like, okay, the people sitting at the 50 are going to be the people who give the most. I mean, it's just basic stuff. So they were down to, they were raising money for different sports to have endowments and, you know, extra money to like go on trips and stuff. I mean, that's insane. Like you said, go to any other place. They are raising money for big projects. And look, college athletics has gotten out of control. The spending, I think we're seeing this pandemic.
Yeah.
You're going to see some things corrected and probably need to be corrected. And not probably, they do. It's out of control. Salaries, facilities, the arms race is out of control. So, like, I give a place like Vanderbilt, on one hand, I appreciate the, hey, we're actually a university and we're not going to get into this. But you have to get some into it.
Right.
If you're going to be in this
league, you can't just totally ignore it.
Yeah, so I think what we're seeing with football and basketball is a lot of years of things not happening, and it's going to be tougher for those programs unless they can get it turned around. I also think there is so much potential at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt can absolutely be what Duke is, which is an elite university with a really nice football stadium and an elite athletics.
Right.
Stanford. Northwestern. Vanderbilt can be that. There's no reason. In this city, the only reason is if the university sort of looks at it like an Ivy and has no interest in athletics being excellent. I mean, why wouldn't you want it to be excellent? You know, the Ivy League, they don't give scholarships. But this isn't the Ivy League, and
right.
You are in the SEC. So it's so frustrating. I know it is very much repetitive, but in this case, a lot of this is sort of a – I mean, look, I'll be honest. It's me taking advantage to an extent of people who want to say some things, and they also want to be protected because they want to get other jobs. But I thought it was important to give them that voice. I really did. And I think it's just they've lost – Vanderbilt has lost some people that they did not have to lose, that they didn't want to lose, that they will lose, that they have lost because of how they went about this. Fire and reapply for your job. It's just – why? It's so stupid.
Well, a part of this that's always rubbed me the wrong way, especially in the last few years when the SEC TV deal has come in, you're getting what, $35, $40 million per year of a check back from the SEC network?
It's 45 now.
It's 45.
For the whole, yeah.
And you're not really too. You're not really investing anything in your own athletic program. You're basically just taking the check and running along with it and doing whatever you want to with it without ever reinvesting anything into your athletic program. I know that rubs me the wrong way. I know for sure it rubs Vanderbilt fans the wrong way. And I know it rubs the SEC the wrong way as well. And like you said, Joe, this story that you come out with, I think just really highlights the issues of what's going on over there in terms of you look around at that athletic department, they just don't really seem to care. Not necessarily the athletic department itself, but the university as a whole, they just don't seem to care. And if you're the SEC, like, how long do you put up with that? Like, how long do you weigh the, hey, Vanderbilt looks great in terms of, you know, they're an academic institution, one of the best in the world. They're in our conference. We love that part about it. But they don't do anything to really market themselves, to improve their facilities, to do anything from the athletic department. And we're giving them $45 million a year. Are you kidding me? Like, how long do you put up with that?
Yeah. Greg Sankey has been asked before about, you know, Vanderbilt, about sort of getting involved, and he blew it off quickly. I don't know that. Look, Vanderbilt's very important. It's a charter member of the SEC. It is important for the SEC to have a school like this. I mean, a lot of conferences have, like, more than one.
Yeah.
You know, the SEC has Duke and Wake Forest. The Big Ten, Big Ten basically has Northwestern. Michigan tries to claim it, but it's not.
Always time for some Michigan shade.
I'm just saying. I mean, Michigan's it's a football factor. It's a very good university, but it's not. It's still a big public school, right? I mean,
right.
Northwestern's a small private school. I'm not ripping on Michigan. Calm down now. I love Go Blue. But I don't think the SEC
might need to check on him medically.
I don't think the SEC is like gonna, you know, threaten Vanderbilt.
Sure.
And also, you've got the best baseball program in the country.
That's true.
You've got maybe the best bowling program in the country, and people can laugh at that. But they have elite. They have tennis. They have soccer. They have really good athletic programs in this umbrella. It's just that the front porch, more than anything, is football and basketball, and men's and women's basketball should both be good there. Football is tough, and I think it will be tough. But basketball at Vanderbilt, I mean, I love that place, and you don't have to do a ton, right?
You don't have to do anything to Memorial Gym. It's perfect the
way
it is.
You might need to do a little bit.
A little bit, but like very minimal. It's a crown jewel. I mean, that's like one of the, I guess, hidden treasures in basketball, the most unique place in college basketball. And you have a marquee name at head coach. You may not be, I guess, like a Roy Williams or a Coach K, but like Jerry Stackhouse is a big deal in basketball. I mean, there's not much you have to do in the basketball department. Just don't do it.
You know, but it's like, but practice facilities, things like that. I mean, there's just obviously the football stuff, a football building, and it's just an overall like respect from the university that has not been there. So, yeah, the athletics people, I think they care, and look, some of this is going to be Candace Lee and whether she can bridge these two things and make athletics better. And I know that there's a range of opinions. I mean, she's really early in her tenure. But this is just one of those things that Vanderbilt didn't need to do this way, and I think the decision came on the university side, but does athletics have a say in how things are done? Because this was not the right way to do it.
We'll continue this discussion on the other side of the break. Take your phone call, 615-737-1025, if you've got thoughts on Vanderbilt. Also, get into some college football as well. That's coming up next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Elijah Campbell behind the glass.
Three letters.
I have no idea.
The Jizza, the genius. That's a deeper cut. That's a deeper cut from Elijah.
I'm really testing you.
That's one of my favorite albums of all time.
Now I'm at 333.
Liquid Swords, baby.
I'm at 333.
All right, you're fine.
Still a respectable average.
Hey, you got to dig into this one, though. This is, in terms of albums, all the way through.
It's an introduction
to classic hip-hop, this is up there.
Look, I'm all for it. Educate me.
You might need to come with some crisscross the next one. You got to balance things out a little bit. You're going to go deep cut Jizza, you know.
Yeah.
I got to come back with an easier one. That was a change up after throwing you a heater. That's tough.
And so I'm hearing this is an all instrumental cut from it. Is that right?
You are getting too fancy for me. My musical Rolodex goes like Travis Tritt, Garth Brooks, Journey. There you go.
Ooh, Journey. Okay. I could be down with some Journey for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Joe, we were talking in the last segment about the dysfunction that is Vanderbilt athletics. And you brought up Candace Story Lee. And that's an interesting point to me. Obviously, very new into the job as athletic director at Vanderbilt. And it seems from all indications I get that she is liked in that athletic department. She is respected. But the question I have is, can she actually make a difference in this athletic department in terms of the way things are being run over there? Because at the end of the day, it's great to be liked, it's great to be respected, but what Vanderbilt fans really care about is, can you change things over there to where athletics are more of a priority for the university? Do you think she'll be able to do that? Do you think she has the power to be able to do that?
Yeah, well, the last question is probably the big one. I will say that going through this story, that's certainly one question I asked of every single person. And I had 12 people that I interviewed for this was, you know, what do you think of Candace? And it was pretty unanimous. You know, there's really strong feelings for her and about what she can do and about her abilities. You know, someone made the point, and there's been a knock on her that, you know, she hasn't worked elsewhere. I think that's fair. I think it would be good, or would have been good, for her to see how another place operates, because just Vanderbilt's just so different. But someone made the point, you know, the NCAA tried to come in here and hire her away. The SEC came in here, tried to hire her away. She has been, you know, a coveted person in athletics. She doesn't have the experience to say, I've done this as an AD, but it's also, I mean, look, man, it's 2020, and you've got a black woman making history as an AD hire, which is just actually ridiculous, okay? I mean, it really is. The first black woman to be an AD in the SEC. I mean, you look at coaching and administrating in college athletics. You know, this should not be making history in 2020. That's another thing. But, look, she has, I think, really good people skills, and I think if you really want to simplify with an AD, you have to have an AD today who can raise money. So that, to me, is one thing. Now, the development people have to be able to do their jobs, but I do think she has potential. I thought Malcolm Turner, her predecessor, he obviously wanted to change a lot of things up, but I think he, in that particular way, had high potential to do really good things. And I know he obviously had other areas where he had never dealt with it in college athletics. He'd never been in college athletics. We know it didn't work out. So that's a long way of saying, I think there's a lot of good things about Candace. I just don't know how it's going to work. There's a new chancellor now, and it's going to take that side independently to also decide, hey, this matters. We're sick of hearing stories like this. We don't just care about U.S. News and World Report rankings. We're hearing people who are saying this is ridiculous and we want to change things. It's got to happen on that side. Can she make it happen on that side? I don't know. I really don't know.
Let me ask you this. What has been the reaction from Vanderbilt fans since you've come out with this article? Because here's how I'm approaching this. I look at Vanderbilt fans and what they've gone through for the last 40 years, but really specifically the last 5 years or so. They're a very passionate fan base, not a large fan base, but a very passionate fan base. What I've noticed the last year or so is even some of my friends who are Vanderbilt fans, who are very passionate, they're just starting not to care. The apathy level is growing pretty much by the day, certainly by the season there at Vanderbilt. What's been your reaction of Vanderbilt fans that you've seen since you came out with this story on Friday?
Yeah, mostly sort of glad you wrote this. You know, they need to have their feet held to the fire, and this needs to be talked about. Also, what you just said, a lot of that. And I agree. I know some hardcore Vanderbilt fans and alums, and I think there's some people that are always going to be like, I'm going to be there in my seat, and I'm going to support them, and it's the place I love. But there, this has been the last few years, the opportunity in this city. Vanderbilt, Northwestern has done a pretty good job of this in Chicago. You know, there's alums from all over, especially the Big Ten. You know, a lot of people live in Chicago, and Northwestern's kind of been like, hey, we can be your number two. You can come see your team probably beat us up on the football field, but also we've got a pretty good basketball arena. You can, like, it's a good source of entertainment in a city loaded with options, and they've made it attractive for people. And that's in Evanston, which is a suburb. I mean, it's right. 20 minutes outside of the city. This is right here in Nashville. You absolutely have had this opportunity to market yourself and grab just the casual fan. That's a different discussion. But then your own fans, I think you are losing people. And apathy is, that's what college athletics people fear.
Yeah.
Anger is one thing, and there's been anger, but apathy you do not want to have. So there's a lot of people that are just like, you know what? This sounds familiar. Wake me up when there's a shovel in the ground somewhere and you are doing something to show that you're investing in athletics. Because people know how much money they're getting from the SEC every year. Like you said earlier, show me.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it is with a lot of people.
Absolutely. That's just kind of the sense I get from Vanderbilt fans as well, as tired of the talk, tired of the same old story. Just show me. And right now, I mean, I think there are good people in the athletic department, obviously, that want to get things done, that want to accomplish things. They want to build a new football stadium. They at least want to renovate the football stadium that they're in. They want to invest money in their basketball program. Just imagine how Tim Corbin feels right now. With all the blood, sweat, and tears that he's poured into that program, he's made it the most successful baseball program in all of America. And he's had to work probably twice as hard to do it with the limited amount of resources that he's got at his disposal. Like, I kind of worry about him sometimes. Like, at what point is he just going to be like, you know what? I'm just tired of this, man. I know he loves Vanderbilt. He loves the program. He loves the kids. But he's had to do a whole lot of things to make that successful over there. And, look, Tim Corbin, if he was on the market right now, he could go to any school in the country.
Tim, well, he might be the best college coach, period, in America.
Yeah.
And, by the way, a guy who worked with him, Andrew Pate, just a tremendous SID. I think Tim Corbin had a great relationship with him. And because of this, Andrew Pate has announced now he's going to Houston, University of Houston. It's a huge loss that Vanderbilt should not have sustained. That there is no way Tim Corbin is happy about that.
Right.
And it did not need to happen.
When we come back, the Titans are firing up training camp this week. Do we think the NFL has taken the right steps to start the season on time in this environment? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.